Welcome to In Tune, the podcast series for Opera Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike Bolton. We've had the chance to meet with several of the cast members of Opera Philadelphia's production of Kevin Putz and Mark Campbell's Pulitzer Prize-winning opera Silent Night for some truly enlightening conversations. But perhaps the most unique experience was sitting down with baritone Liam Bonner, who sings the role of French Lieutenant Audebert, baritone Craig Irvin, who plays the German Lieutenant Horstmeier, and Gabe Pricer, who sings Scottish Lieutenant Gordon. All three of these men have reunited in Philadelphia after having performed the opera when this co-production premiered in Minnesota in November of 2011. I have to be honest, I felt a little bit like a fly on the wall as these three very talented singers and close friends shared their thoughts on the opera. Their camaraderie and respect for each other made this a very passionate and entertaining conversation in Opera Philadelphia's offices. All three up-and-coming singers make their debut with Opera Philadelphia in this production. And I asked them, how has it been to reinvestigate the score after having done it almost a year and a half ago? Craig Irvin begins his comment, followed by Gabe Pricer.
It's fantastic. I love this score. It's an amazing show. And even in rehearsal, when we do our scenes, especially the truce discussions, I get chills just in rehearsal. Without costumes on, without orchestration, without set, just the interaction and the piece itself pulls that emotion out. It's brilliant.
I mean, it really was like a family reunion, more like a fraternity reunion, you know, because it's all guys and then two girls, basically, and we were very happy to have the two girls to soften it up a little bit, obviously. But it's just a special thing, not just the cast, but Kevin Putz and Mark Campbell are like family. And Michael Christie, the conductor, Eric Simonson, Octavio, the assistant director, they're all like family.
I asked Liam Bonner that if he knew the impact this opera would have and if it would go on to win a Pulitzer Prize.
I remember when I was learning the piece, I thought, this is good. You know, I think this will go over well. And it exceeded every expectation that I had. I think it surprised a lot of people in a good way. Not that it wasn't a good piece already, but just, you know, you don't know with a new piece until you put it in front of an audience and see how they respond to it so that you understand that they're experiencing it the same way that you're experiencing it performing-wise. And so the audience response, I mean, tickets sales after opening night went through the roof for the remaining performances because word got out. And, you know, I don't know how the Pulitzer works. So I didn't know that, you know, he was able to be nominated based on the time of the year or anything like that. But when word got out that he won the Pulitzer, I absolutely agreed that he deserved it. It's a very special thing. His first opera. It's really impressive.
I know that I have nothing to do with it, but I take full credit personally. I'm sure you guys do also.
Well, I mean, in a way, there is a sense of personal pride to have been associated with the original cast of a piece that months later wins the Pulitzer. I mean, Kevin won the Pulitzer, but I think everyone involved in that production, I mean, I'm very emotional about that and felt connected to that win as well. I mean, it's like you're child winning an award, I guess, in a sense, and the entire production team, costumes, lighting, our fight choreographer. Yeah. When you see the piece, Doug is just incredible. The way he's done this battle scene, it's extremely intense.
After the production's premiere, there was significant amount of buzz and conversation about this phenomenally choreographed battle sequence, which happens in the beginning of the opera. Here's what Craig Irvin, Liam Bonner, and Gabriel Pricer had to say.
To be in that sequence with the sound effects and the music that Kevin's created and the special effects, I mean, obviously I wasn't in World War I, but it feels like a real deal.
It is great.
Especially it's better than playing Halo. When I got the score, I mean, your imagination goes wild of how many different ways they could possibly set this. Ooh. And then to see how they did it, you wouldn't want to, you can't imagine another possible way to do it.
I found it interesting because as I'm reading, looking through, I got the libretto first before I even got the score, just reading the libretto, and I'm like, the only possible way I could think to do it was you have to have a rotating stage, like the original Les Mis, and then rotating around it.
With the bunkers going around.
That's exactly how they did it. And then with the split of the center for the chalet scene. Right. Which is, I mean, it's brilliant the way they use a stage, because there's so much going on and so many storylines, and still done in 2.5 hours total, right. With intermission. It's brilliant.
Well, yeah. With regards to the sound effects, though, you know, a lot of the sound effects that are being used are things that you can't recreate with an orchestra.
Yeah.
So it's the machine guns, the bombs during that battle scene that the effects, and then Ponchel, my aide-de-champ, has an alarm clock that goes off, which is also another sound effect. But, you know, the score really comes to life when you're with the orchestra.
Yeah.
Kevin's music, you know, the way he orchestrates it is what gives it that life more than just a piano vocal score.
Absolutely. And
we were working
the music
from.
Speaks for itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I want to say just one thing about the orchestration. We were talking earlier about the rehearsal process and the workshop process. And I got to be part of the workshop process, and I was there for the first orchestra read of it. And there's a sunrise in the orchestration that I literally just, my jaw dropped, and I stared at the orchestra and watched it. And it's some of the most beautiful music I'd ever heard. And then the entrance music for my first line starts, which is a fugue, which gave me a heart attack because I got lost completely because I was just so focused on the beautiful orchestration. So I just looked at Michael Christie waiting for him to point to me to go.
I think one of the successes, though, with this piece are those orchestral interludes, because
absolutely.
Kevin
right.
is first and foremost an orchestral composer, being this his first opera. And so those are some, I mean, really meaty parts of the entire experience that really show off his talent. It's done vocally as well, but those very specific moments where it's just Kevin doing his thing without singers getting in the way, so to speak,
right.
Are just top notch.
And the way he does it seamlessly until he wants to make a point, and then there's an abrupt change. It's great.
He always leaves you wanting more, too.
Yeah,
we've talked about this. It goes so quickly from one vignette to the next, or one musical theme to the next. You always want more, and that's the genius of a great composer.
I asked the three baritones about life in the military.
I was doing some research today, and the average age of the soldier is 20 years old, and there was a lot of fast promoting going on. So I assume, you know, early to mid-20s for these three lieutenants. And we get out there in the middle of nowhere, and we're all being promised, well, we'll be done in a couple months. You know, we'll be back home by Christmas.
Yeah.
And Christmas comes around, and we're still out there, and we don't even know why we're out there. So,
and from the vantage point that we have now, they're out there for a lot longer.
Exactly.
They're just at the start. And that's part of the reason this Christmas truce historically could even happen, because it was at the beginning. And a lot of the atrocities that happened hadn't really started happening yet. I find it interesting because the truce happens because the people on the other side of the gun are a lot like you, and a lot of times people forget that and don't realize that.
Well, it's the way the piece is written, because I mean, every time you're in the camp at the very beginning, the way each is sent off to find out that they're at war. I mean, the Germans are at an opera, and the general comes out and says, "We're at war, and we've got to go, and we've got to clean ourselves," basically, of these horrible, awful people who are trying to overtake us. But they make them the enemy. Every country makes the other country the enemy in the minds of their own people.
Yeah.
And so that's you know, it's this sort of misdirection rather than here's what's really happening, here's what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden you get out there and you hear them singing Christmas carols on the other side of the trenches. You're like, they're just like me. The commonality, the humanity comes into play.
And that scene, I think, especially in this show between our three characters, because as we very uncomfortably talk with each other, especially at the beginning, we start to learn about each other
and the similarities.
And we're basically
everything
we're
that
same
unites
so
us rather than separates.
If they were to perform any other character in the opera, which one would it be?
We had a discussion about
this last night.
A couple of us went out, and it's the strangest thing.
Give me the whole rundown.
The guy who plays Ponchel, Andrew Wilkowski, did the workshop, but he sang my role, Odebert, for the workshop. And he thought, you know, I like this role, this is nice. And then when they cast the show, they said, actually, we'd like you to play Ponchel. And he thought, well, didn't I sing Odebert well enough? And then when he started studying Ponchel and singing it, he realized, he said, actually, there's no other role that I could play in this show. This is absolutely perfect for me. This is what I do vocally. This is how I am personality-wise, so that I can give more of myself to this character in this role. And we sort of thought about it and talked a little bit and realized, I think for most of us, there's really no other option.
All of us can agree that we empathize with our characters in some regard. You know, Lieutenant Gordon always feels like he has to be the first one to say something.
Yeah.
You know, when we get in no man's land, and that's just something I relate to, you know. So really all of our characters kind of fit.
And they're all wonderful characters. Like I will say, if I was told you can do any of these roles, which would you like? I would pick my character. Because it's fantastic and fits my voice very well. If someone was to say, hey, we'd like you to do Odebear instead, I would do it because I think it's a great role. Everybody does their role so well that it's great.
And finally, what's their favorite moment in the opera?
The sunrise. Yeah. The sunrise after the chorus. All the soldiers singing about sleeping. Mm-hmm. And then out of that chorus... Sprink has this great solo, just as he's longing for Anna. And then out of that comes this gorgeous sunrise. And then my first entrance, and I just scream about the trees instead of guns.
Well, I'm partial to really the only aria in the opera, which is mine. But it goes, the reason that I like it is because it goes from that moment directly into the sleep chorus in so much detail that we overlap for an entire bar of music. And what's really brilliant about it for me is the fact that I'm on the vowel that I'm on in the word dormir is the exact same vowel that the chorus, the Scottish troops come in on sleep. And so they just come together so perfectly, and just there's no, I mean, feel free to applaud if you liked my aria, but it just the transition, like Craig mentioned earlier, with the way Kevin writes, it happens so smoothly and intimately, beautifully.
Yeah, I'm so glad to do this piece again.
And it's hard to pick one though, because I also have a really great moment where I just get to stand on stage at the end when Bill's character basically defects so that he can be with Anna, with Kelly Caduceus's character, and he basically pours his heart out in the French bunker about how he would rather give up his country than to be without her again, to be separated from her. And it's this melody that just, I mean, every time I hear it, I get chills. The way Bill does it is absolutely extraordinary. It's just written so well for his voice.
Yeah.
And it's so romantic and emotional at that point in the piece. So, and I just get to stand there and drink it in while he's doing it. I don't have to do anything, but enjoy it.
Yeah, and that scene comes right after one of my other favorite scenes where I get to yell at him. Like, we just scream back and forth at each other, and it's so much fun. Ugh.
Do you want to add anything to that?
The whole show is my favorite moment, really.
Okay, other than those moments.
If you think about it. Also, the battle sequence is just chilling, and I've told several people this. I think the show is such a success because the music could stand by itself and win a Pulitzer Prize. The story could stand by itself and win a Pulitzer Prize. And then we put those two things together, it's indescribable. I mean, it's truly a masterpiece.
Performances of Kevin Putz and Mark Campbell's Silent Night run from February 8th through the 17th at the historic Academy of Music in Philadelphia. For tickets, visit our website at www.operaphila.org or call Ticket Philadelphia at 215-893-1018. That's 215-893-1018. And don't forget, if you haven't already, check out the other podcasts in this series, In Tune. And if you have any comments or questions, you can email us at outreach@operaphila.org. That's outreach@operaphila.org. Thank you for joining us for this edition of In Tune. I'm your host, Mike Bolton, and I hope to see you at the opera.